This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4! Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, grade it, change it, point it, tune it, press it, snap it, work it, click it, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, click it, write it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip it, zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, jam it, lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch it, date it, name it.
Good afternoon, this is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. Thank you, Ben Rylan, for the news just now. Appreciate the stealing of our thunder, introducing our guests before we even get to introduce ourselves.
Aww.
There goes the secret.
I was pretty happy with that, actually. Thanks, Ben.
How much did you pay him?
Well,
I didn't realize our newsies were corruptible. But
wow, this has gone somewhere very dark very early.
Corruption's too strong a word.
True.
Compliant, I don't know.
Flexible
newsies.
Tumblr.com.
Only on Joy 94.9. Ah, oh, geez. Now, those voices you've heard, you probably recognise all of them. If you don't,
you
then...
You probably don't recognise me, let's be honest.
That one is... that voice is Jason Murray. Hello, Jason.
Hello.
All the way from Sydney. Michael is also here with us doing weird things with
Michael's microphone. Michael's making very strange gestures to me. Something to do with a mouth and a microphone.
Yeah, that's it.
You know?
My name is Mark, of course, and we also have in the studio with us Raina.
Hello.
That's it. That's, you know, hello.
Hello.
It's like a chant. Hello. Hey,
I am not singing.
Someone has been renting Beetlejuice recently, haven't they?
Possibly. Now, what are we? Oh, what, actually, before we start, I'm going to say a special shout out to Matt and Kate. Hello, if you're listening. I don't know if you are. I presume you are. But if you are, you should become a member if you're not already a member here on Joy 94.9.
That's not just Matt and Kate, actually. That's everyone.
No, it's Matt and Kate.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh.
But others
no
as well.
One, no one else needs to be a member.
Everyone should become a member.
I've been duped.
What have we got on the show today?
We have lots of good stuff. iPhone rumours.
I have very so well-fitting ranty pants.
Ah, yes.
Ah, excellent.
Yeah. Raina actually looked at my pants just then as well. Thank you.
I will not comment on the fit, but I'm sure there's going to be much rant.
And we're going to need those ranty pants.
Because we're talking about data retention, the retention of data. How about that with ranty pants? Let's try and make that connection.
Hmm? And then online piracy.
Yes.
There's no connection between that at all, is there?
No. But do stay tuned because we will have lots of insight into that. What else are we going to talk about? We've got, iPhone 6. There's been an announcement by Apple to tell us that there's a big event coming up in September.
Prepare yourselves.
So that's exciting. Of course, the iPhone rumor mill has just kicked into second gear, or maybe fifth gear. I'm not quite sure.
Sorry, what was that? I just dozed off.
Here we go.
We're neatly balanced today, half-half.
Oh, fair and balanced.
And reported. Just remember, Jason's and mine are bigger than yours.
until the iPhone 6 comes out.
That's true.
That reminds me of a secret I read earlier in the week about pant sizes. But and we might actually get a chance, if we have a moment, to talk about Secret as well, the app, or just generally apps that are available on phones which allow you to talk about things that are completely anonymous. Like the Secret app. You can post things on them and it ends up not being told who actually said it, who posted it, which is kind of cool.
That was very well put.
That was actually a really bad way of describing it. But
you posted it.
We're going to get better at it towards the end of the show, I'm sure. What else have we got to talk about? There's a very excellent way of determining speech from looking at a chip packet.
Get that. So it's some real James Bond stuff right there.
All that has to happen is a high-speed video taken of a chip packet in a room. You don't need to know what sound's going on.
Just observe the vibrations on the packet.
Chip packet.
And interpret the sounds that are making the vibrations happen on the packet.
Mm. Does it work with popcorn packets?
I reckon it would work with any suitable packet.
They pointed it at a plant as well, and it worked on a plant. So, anyway.
The spy plants.
Yes. One for the tinfoil hat wearers. Anyway, shall we move on to some iPhone 6 rumours? We may as well get it out of the way, right?
I'll be back in the beep. The iPhone 6 rumour mill has gone into overdrive, hasn't it?
We've
heard, and this has been a rumour for quite some time, that there's going to be two screen sizes, a 4.7-inch and a 5.5-inch screen size. There's going to be a larger resolution because the screen must maintain the retina quality, which is to say the pixel density. And apparently there'll be thinner side bezels. There may or may not be sapphire glass coated over the front, which doesn't mean you'll be looking at a sapphire. It's fine. It'll still look like a phone. There'll be a bigger battery, which would go with a larger screen size because you've got more space inside the phone to put a larger battery in, a more efficient processor and camera improvements, and basically everything that you would expect them to do because they've done it for the last few years. You change things and you make things better.
There's nothing really majorly exciting about these rumours. There's nothing in there. I mean, thinner side bezels, you know, it's kind of it's a visual thing, I guess. I like the idea of sapphire glass. I don't think it's quite possible. In fact, a lot of the rumours or the reporting on the rumours suggests that it's a bit too hard for the manufacturing cycle to ramp up sapphire.
I thought it was more too expensive.
One of the rumours that's getting around is that there is actually plenty of sapphire glass to be had out there in the market, but that maybe Apple is just going to stick with it anyway.
Right.
For the hell. But there are plenty of...
Can someone tell me why would you use sapphire glass to protect a phone?
So sapphire is actually one of the hardest materials next to diamonds.
Right. We have plenty of products out there in the market already to protect phones from being scratched.
And then you'd kill all this aftermarket business.
Ooh. Oh, all those sticky little... No, come on.
But Apple has...
And glass replacement.
Apple doesn't have any particular interest in the aftermarket business, right? I mean...
I don't know. Well, are there any licensing fees to, you know, make accessories?
Yeah, here's your glass...
I don't know.
Here's your glass screen protector made for iPhone.
Yeah. It's... Yeah.
What's wrong with a bit of cling wrap over the front of a screen? It needs glass.
Yeah,
I want a major new feature. Because Apple are sort of resting on their laurels a bit. There's nothing in amongst the rumours that's suggesting that it's going to be particularly exciting. I mean, maybe a bigger screen would be all right.
What about the partnership with IBM for Enterprise?
No, we talked about that quite recently, and I think our assessment was okay. And and secondly, I mean, yeah, the iPhone 6 and all, but they're still really so consumer focused.
Of course they are. Consumers are buying their phones.
Well, yeah, that's the IBM thing is interesting, but I don't think it's interesting enough to rock the world on September 6th.
Yeah.
September 9th, that's the big day. Set your alarms, get up early, do whatever.
Wait, that's still a month away.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you new in town?
This next month is going to be really annoying.
Right.
Every iPhone user gets a little notification. 20 more sleeps, 19 more sleeps, 18 more sleeps.
Ring. It's certainly not at all like all of the hype going around about the new Samsung phone earlier this year, though. And that beeping thing. Were you here for the beeping thing, Jason?
The beeping thing?
In Bourke Street, there was a certain large telco's retail store, which is on a corner. A prominent corner had a loud beeping countdown running for about 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
It was like the start of 24, but for the entire month.
wait, are you sure it wasn't actually a promo for 24?
No,
it was definitely the phone.
Man,
It It had some massive water feature in the window as well.
Of course
which,
it did.
Yeah.
Well, why wouldn't you? That's actually the only thing that's missing from Samsung phones at the moment is a water feature.
Was it to highlight some feature that allowed you to dunk
it,
your
it
phone in
water?
Yes, it was water resistant.
But
which,
also,
which means it's not. It wasn't because it was copying iOS 7, but it actually was legitimately water resistant.
It is pretty spectacular too. And I suppose if you owned one of those displays, you'd be looking for any excuse to lease it out to any prominent place to show it off.
Probably.
Yes. Was very specky.
Mm. You're listening to TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in technology gadgets and consumer electronics. And we'll be talking about data retention and the government and getting our ranty pants on right after this.
TechnoGaze. Love your afternoons. Joy 94.9.
We hope you do love your afternoons here on Joy 94.9. Now, if you do want to get in contact us while we're here in the studio, you can do so by texting us 0427 Joy 949.
That's right.
We love to hear messages from the outside of the studio anyway.
That's right. In fact, someone very close to outside the studio has just written in with a question, and the question is... hi, TechnoGaze crew. This is from lovely Heath, who is on the front desk today while Mushin is having a lovely day off. I have, for the first time, joined the beta program and upgraded Mavericks, as in Mac OS X, to Yosemite beta. Seem to be stuck. I won't read the whole thing. But there's an issue using Safari. Can't send the feedback because the feedback advisor won't load and it crashes. What do you suggest? Look, here's the challenge about installing a public beta is that sometimes things just aren't very polished and terrible things can happen.
This is actually the same reason I haven't installed Android L on my Nexus 5.
It's exactly.
It's a beta.
And I mean, I don't think I'll even rush to install it as soon as it actually comes out for real either. I'm going to be giving it a couple of days just to make sure because I only have one Mac now. It's not like I have a fallback Mac that I can, rely on.
Fallback Mac.
A fallback Mac. And
it sounds like an 80s TV show.
Fallback Mac. It does. It sounds like some sort of rugged Canadian
of
hero. Yes.
Fallback Mac.
Fallback MacGyver.
Fallback MacGyver. He's got a mullet and all. So, yeah, if any of you are out there using your Yosemite, I would love to hear what you guys think. I'm sure that everybody else does too.
The thing about
so you should
it
totally
is,
write to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And as making the point, you really can only wait until the next release of that beta comes out
to fix it
potentially fix it. Hopefully, they've picked up the issue and figured it out. Mm. But you're out of support. It's not really sort of.
There's always email.
If you go into the Apple Store, they'll probably likely say. Need to restore to backup.
But
that's right.
I'm sure being a public beta, they're actually collecting feedback from people as well. So surely there's like a website that you can go and put all this stuff in.
If you can't use the feedback advisor, yes, there's probably some other way to deal with it.
Isn't the feedback advisor some component of the operating system, whereas you can just like log on to... OS X Yosemite there beta feedback.tumblr.com or /apple.gov.
That's right. But yeah, that's the usual thing.
Yes.
It's
we're getting lots of love in the on the SMS front. Thank you, Kate.
and thank you, Shannon, for your report on glow in the dark sheep.
This is what happens when I sit away from the screen and I can't see what's going on.
From across the other side of the ditch.
From the
we've
ditch.
Got glow in the dark sheep. That's fantastic. Should we talk about some more topics?
Let's talk about terrible things going on in the world.
Jason came here specifically with his ranty pants.
Yeah. Right, we don't want to put these to waste.
Before we put the ranty pants on or get them to use, let's talk about Russian bloggers for a quick moment, shall we?
Okay, no, I can get my ranty pants on about this. This is disgraceful.
Jason, hand your ranty pants on. Just for a second.
Comrade Reno, we have your ranty pants right here.
Yes, and you know where I am because...
We have custom built them in exactly your size. You did not even have to give them to us because you have registered.
That's right. Oh, my God. So in Russia, we've talked about this a little bit before. So you must register now if you are in Russia. You are a blogger. You must be registered the way that you would be as a journalist.
If you have more than 3,000 readers.
So if you're a blogger with fans.
Did you hear what LiveJournal did as a response?
No idea.
So LiveJournal,
which is in Russia.
You log in and you see the dashboard. You see how many people are following you and reading your thing. If you're in Russia, LiveJournal will only report 2,500 plus.
Yeah. But the Russian government, and I can't do a Russian accent, said that we have ways of knowing how many people are accessing your site. So it doesn't matter what numbers you put up there, we can tell.
They must have the metadata.
Now, here's another thing that they want to do.
I think they probably have the content as well.
They probably do. Certainly, well, LiveJournal now is owned by a Russian company, isn't it? It used to be US. The other thing that's worthwhile knowing about being a blogger in Russia as well is that if you do have lots and lots of readers and so on, you can voluntarily sign up, but it is mandatory if they tell you to, and also you have to have your real name, etc., in there, which makes it a little bit tricky if you are reporting on things that maybe are not...
Sounds very... what's the word?
Totalitarianism.
I don't really understand how it is that someone just doesn't go out and just create a Tumblr and start posting on it. And you know, even if they're in Russia, like Tumblr wouldn't be beholden to Russian law.
You know, IP address tracking, so on and so forth. Hey, let's talk about metadata and what happens when connections are made from one place to another.
I already tried to push the conversation in that direction.
Yes, you did.
You may not have noticed. It might have been too subtle.
And what's that? Did you say metadata? You really are enjoying those pants, aren't you?
I know.
They do fit you so well.
Thank you.
So, of course, this is in relation to a ridiculous parade of politicians throughout the week.
We actually need to give the segment its proper name from the run sheet.
Old dudes making it clear they know nothing about the internet or indeed the case they're trying to prosecute.
Oh, so snappy, that will catch on. Old dudes are scared of the internet.
Ah, old man yells at cloud. Old man actually yells literally at yells at cloud in this case.
But so eloquently as well. The words just flow so smoothly.
Okay. Right,
so what are we talking about?
What's the poop?
George Brandis, our lovely Attorney General, and of course Tony Abbott, our lovely Prime Minister, tried to get on the airwaves this week and try to explain their proposed changes to metadata retention laws. Now, isn't it always when a new government gets in, or even an old government sort of gets back in to...
Yeah.
One of the other happens every election.
Yeah, so pretty much all the time, there's some politician saying, hey, let's try and track more internet users' data. Why? What is the purpose? And it's... So I guess they're talking about terrorism now. And it's
of course they're talking about terrorism.
Time to do that with all the stuff that's going on in the world today.
Mm.
And they're now saying that they want to keep... quote, metadata, unquote, but they weren't very clear about what that metadata is.
And not only were they not clear, as in, it wasn't not clear as in, don't worry, populace of Australia, don't worry. It was more like, and this happened on Sky, there's old mate Brandis going, metadata, well, you see, it's stuff about what you're doing, but it's not what you're doing, but it's these things, and it's also those things, and it was seriously, I think.
Yeah, it was like those things that are actually considered... data or content, according to ASIO. And in fact, ASIO and the Australian Federal Police put out a statement on Thursday or something, trying to clarify everything.
It's like don't worry about this silly old fool. Let's tell you what we really want.
Do we have an example?
Do we have an audible example of some of the things that were going on?
I think
we could post one on our Facebook page if we don't quite have one.
Yeah, yes. but the talk is about web page browsing, and of course the internet usage is not just about the web. Of course, it's more than that. But to use the example of browsing the web, as much as our Attorney General did get a little bit confused, it seems that what they actually want to retain is the IP addresses of the connections that are made.
Yep.
So when you connect to a website, the IP address of
the actual server that has the website on it has an IP address.
Yes,
and they want to collect that.
Yep.
And when you did it.
Yep.
And
The other aspect is that I think Malcolm Turnbull, who's much more eloquent when it comes to technical explanations, he was making the point that in fact it's your own IP address that needs to be retained. So when I connect to the internet, I get a dynamic IP address. It might change over time, the course of 2 or 3 days.
Right. And this is when people start explaining that it's not a truck, it's a series of tubes and a whole bunch of other stuff. So it was just getting more and more crazy as the week went on, with people going, I think it's this. No, I think it's that. No, I think it's something else. And, you know, it's more like collecting an envelope. Now, but let's talk about metadata for a minute, though, because it sounds like we're talking about something that's possibly not a huge problem. But what really is a problem is that when you are collecting metadata without a warrant, which is what they want to be able to do as well, they want to be able to look at that.
Yeah.
And they can already do that, I think.
Apparently they can, because we've heard this week that if the police did not have access to metadata in some cases, they wouldn't have solved them. So they've already got it.
That's right. But they want ISPs to maintain that store of data even longer. And the thing is, all of that data builds up a pretty amazing picture of what's going on, even if they can't tell what you're doing. The EFF has a really great example of this.
I've got it up in front of me.
You've got it up? Why don't you read it out?
So the EFF had a slide. This is from late last year in a presentation. It was on why metadata matters.
EFF being the Electronic Frontiers Foundation.
I think we fumbled that fairly well. Electronic Frontiers Foundation. Indeed. So, why metadata matters? They know you rang a phone sex service at 2:24 a.m. and spoke for 18 minutes, but they don't know what you talked about. They know you called the suicide prevention hotline from the Golden Gate Bridge. The topic of the call remains a secret.
That's right.
They know you spoke with an HIV testing service, then your doctor, then your health insurance company in the same hour, but they don't know what was discussed.
Hmm.
That's why that's dangerous. That's why that's really dangerous, because you can find out, and I mean, you might
be
looking at that going...
You can infer many things from metadata.
You can infer amazing things from metadata, and yeah, those are all pretty specific examples that don't happen to you every day, but there are plenty of things that do happen to you every day. They might know that you're in a relationship with somebody because you contact them a certain amount of times. Hmm. They might know from other kind of metadata about, like, maybe you're doing some online shopping for things. So they might be able to infer things about, you know, your lifestyle based on where you do your shopping. Or they might be able to infer that you might have some, you know, attitudes about money or whatever because you're looking up certain websites about loans or banking or any of those sorts of things, or financial counselling services. Like.
Also, so it's interesting you say that, though, because we keep getting told repeatedly that they'll be wanting to capture the IP addresses of websites, but not your web browsing history.
Right. Now, Not every website has its own IP address.
This is correct.
I have a website and it shares the same IP address as it shares the same hosted server option as, I think, 380 other websites. But it just seems really sort of interesting. And there was such a lack of clarity. Mm. Oh, we don't want the website that you're looking at. We just want the address of the website you're looking at. Well, what's the difference?
In many cases, there is no difference. In the case of businesses operating their own websites on their own infrastructure, then, you know, it tends to be one IP per site. But, in terms of, like, hosted blogs and things like that, they will all share one or a few different IPs.
Right. So they don't know. And I think one of the examples that was getting around on The Guardian earlier in the week was you could be looking at cutekittycats.com or you could be looking at facebookforterrorists.com. Mm. Like, it could be either one of those things.
I think Michael had a good example of a business that he was planning to start earlier.
Yeah, I was going to have a mix of, you know, legitimate businesses and terrorist sites and just come into the same IP address and no one would be able to tell.
Right.
But the biggest thing is that it means that a whole lot of law enforcement agencies will have access to this metadata without the need to get any permission or any oversight. So, it's one thing if they want to go and have a look for something specific, and therefore you go through a process where you document what you're doing and why you're doing it. And the other thing is if you're going on a fishing trip or somebody just feels like, you know, from a personal little investigation to go in and have a look at things.
Circumstantial evidence, right?
Mm.
Now, earlier yesterday, so there was a bit of a briefing. Again, we heard from some folks from ASIO and the AFP as well, and the Deputy Commissioner actually from the AFP, his name's Andrew Colvin, he was saying that they weren't necessarily that interested in the destination, just the other bit, the bit on your end.
Mm. We had a message in it from an anonymous person.
An anonymous texter says...
We do know your phone number, but we're not allowed to read it out on air. But the point is made, Google knows all anyway, so what's the problem?
Google doesn't know all, the NSA does.
That's right.
And this is a distinction. So Google does have its mitts in a very large part of the internet, as in pretty much every single web page known to man. But they are a private entity. They have their own agreements with you as a user. We're talking about the government here. They're giving themselves the right to access this information across the board. So it's not just a single entity. And sure, Google are, you know, a pretty big entity anyway, but they just really deal in the web. Mm. So what about other metadata that might be...
Well, they don't just deal in the web, though. I mean, Google deals in your phone and your email and a whole bunch of other things as well. But the thing is, you can opt out of Google if you want. I know it's really hard, but you can. Mm. This is mandatory metadata to be held by the government for a number of months, forever, by your ISP.
Yes.
You can't opt out of someone's ISP, I guess.
No, that's right. And the problem is that by... the government aggregating it, they get to see everything, whereas Google, like you said, Mark, has just got a very sort of narrow snapshot of what you've been doing.
And you can also use mechanisms on your own computer to circumvent what Google know and don't know. So, you know, being the client, you can actually do a whole bunch of things to stop that, whereas you can't stop the government from collecting that information from your ISP.
No.
Anyway, yes, lots of rantiness.
Assuming all these laws pass, you won't be able to stop it.
Correct.
So if you do want to stop it now, what can you do?
Vote this government out.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be handy because there's an election. Wait, no, there isn't.
If there's an election.
I think we need to air out Jason's ranty pants.
Mm-hmm. Let's do that. We'll do that while we're not actually talking. So we'll be back with more
Watch
in a few
out,
moments.
Burke Street.
You're listening to Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9. Techno Gaze here on Joy 94.9. I love it when the modem sound is used. We use it in our podcast introduction, don't we?
Nostalgic, isn't it?
Mm.
When was the last time any of the four of us actually had a modem that made that sound?
Who remembers Hayes Command Set?
I do. AT-DT.
Do you also remember the phone numbers of the BBSs that you used to call? Because I kind of do.
No.
I know one of them started with a 9576.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not going to read out the rest of that number because it could be someone else's number now. That'd be bad.
Am I allowed to show my age?
Mm-hmm.
The first modem I had wasn't a normal modem. It was an acoustic coupler. So you took the handset from your telephone and you plugged it into these two little rubber suction cups.
Come on, Michael. We've all seen War Games.
True. Yeah,
and what is it used for now? Rubber suction cups? So
I don't know what you'd recycle them for. I have no idea.
While we're taking a slight...
The War Games references just landed with Raina.
No, I got it. I was laughing at you pointing at me going, hey.
Very special shout out as well to Kent and David for liking us on Facebook.
That's right.
And possibly Rob as well, if we didn't mention you last week. Hello, Rob. For liking us on Facebook as well.
If you like us on Facebook now, we will give you a personal shout out in a very low and sultry voice.
Hey.
You'll have to record this.
We'll get you to record them.
Well, okay. Well, we can do that right now. Hey there,
listener.
Insert name here. We really appreciate you liking us on Facebook. Thanks very much, and tell your friends.
Now, that was the topic of one of my favourite sort of email forwards and blog things that was going around earlier in the week, is a really insincere apology from an airline going, hello, passenger.
Oh, yes.
Oh, just the worst. I mean, remember mail merge people?
Yeah, so my favorite poor action by an airline at the moment was last time I flew down, there was a certain company flew us down, delivered us to the tarmac in Melbourne, and then said, you're gonna have to wait about 10 minutes for the stairs to come out now, but here's some music instead, and they played Happy.
Did the staff dance along?
No, but I think the glares from people as they got off the plane were probably happy enough.
You know, I used to fly an airline that used to do that a lot, but with black fingernails, red wine, and they'd be like, if you want to get there, you've got to go straight down. It's like,
oh no.
But onwards with tech.
Are we talking
stuff.
About tech? Yeah.
I don't know.
We're talking about chips.
Scientists.
Chips. I want chips.
Science chips.
Yeah.
They've figured out how to reconstruct speech through soundproof glass by watching a bag of potato chips.
Right.
There's an excellent YouTube clip. What would we Google for if we needed this?
Slow-mo potato chips.
Well, it's MIT turning recorded vibrations back into speech, so I guess could just say MIT. I'm sure you can actually find it on the MIT website.
Yeah. So it's actually using a very high-speed camera pointed through some glass and through a soundproof glass, in fact, at some potato chips. The video actually has, like, the use of certain tones, so it's a very sort of clear distinction. You know, it's not like speech as such from the first instance, anyway. To reconstruct this sound, but basically what it does, this high speed camera, because it's looking at the vibrations in the chip packet, right. It figures out that this is the actual sound, and so they have a repeating of the sound.
Of course, and because that's all that sound is. It's just air vibrating, and you can't really always see air vibrating, but you can certainly see chip packets and plants. And
I am not concerned about this in the slightest in my household, because there would not be a packet of chips sitting on the table not being touched. Because I think if you put your hand inside it, it disrupts the vibrations.
Yes. I have a question as well. It's really important. Are we talking about like foil or plastic?
I don't. I think it was foil by the looks of
is it,
the
is it that
video.
Plasticky foil backed stuff that chip packets are made out of now.
I found
it hard to tell. It's they were 15 feet away as well, which I thought was amazing, and they could just use a regular old camera to do that. They didn't need a special.
Yes. So the second demonstration was actually a 60 frames per second webcam that was used, and they, without actually minutely analyzing every single little vibration, they could make deduction on the vibration from the 60 frames that were available to them, and could reconstruct a much lower quality version of the audio.
So can they then access the metadata about that conversation?
They know you ate chips, but they don't know what you were thinking.
They don't
about.
Know what flavor they were.
Do they know where the potatoes came from, though?
Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe
depends they, which way the chip packet is.
You actually need to trace the origin IP of the chips.
Well, in the Internet of Things, potatoes will have RFID tags on them.
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting one. Feel free to Google it, MIT chip packet sound reconstruction. I'm sure it would find it some nice one to keep you busy for Saturday afternoon.
I'm looking at the video and like it's kind of cool, but it's also really dull because you're just watching a chip.
And in fact, if you look at the video and you want to know what they're actually saying, they're repeating "Mary had a little lamb; its fleece was white as snow."
This is a thing as well. So the experiment was done with known words, so it's kind of, especially with the speech reconstruction component.
Aren't most words known?
Yeah, but the phrase is also known. So how well it would be usable for constructing speech when you don't know what is actually being said, because you hear the playback of the reconstructed speech and it does sound a bit garbled. How good would it be in every circumstance?
Well, I think part of the experiment was that they could use information that they didn't already know.
Right. Okay. Yep.
Any truth to the rumour they were sponsored to do this?
By who?
I wonder who would sponsor them.
Oh, imagine that as a bit of a sales pitch, though. It's like, well, you know, buy our chips.
They won't talk to you.
So actually,
ASIO won't be recording your metadata.
You can't identify the chip packet in the video.
So I think that...
Well, actually, you probably can. It shows the barcode.
From now on, security measures involve eating chips that may be available to you, right?
If you're going to have a conversation that may be recorded, make sure you're eating potato chips at the time.
Yeah.
Raina's got some sea salt chocolate with her today.
I can't really make a chip sound, though.
No, it's because it's not chips.
This is like every time your mum told you not to eat with your mouth full, like now, if you care about your safety.
Don't eat with your mouth full. It's very hard to eat
otherwise.
Sorry,
don't talk with your mouth full.
So I've observed the metadata on your food packet, and I've concluded that it is not chips.
It is not chips. Well done. Well done.
Jeez. Shall we talk about piracy for a little bit?
No.
Piracy. Because this is the other thing George Brandis has been busy with.
Who wants the Randy pants?
Because Australia is the worst online pirate in the world.
I think you might mean we're the best online pirates in the world. No, okay.
That's right.
Sorry, very quick Randy pants. This is based on a study conducted by PwC, who were commissioned to do so by the Australian Copyright Council, so no vested interest. And when they looked at the value of copyright in the economy, which works out to be something like employs 900,000 people, 8% of the workforce, $90 billion a year, they included things as, you know, authors and writers, which is probably fair enough, translators, newspapers, magazines, libraries, you know, furniture makers, toy game manufacturers, because there's some...
Furniture makers?
Yeah, because they're sort of... allied sort of industry. So there's a portion of that.
Really?
It gets better. Software developers.
Oh.
So if you're a software development house, your contribution to the economy is part of the calculation of what the impact is.
I would wager a bet that the majority of people who work in a software development house might well be the people circumventing copyright laws.
Well,
that's
the problem. But, I mean, but you get things like art galleries, picture framers.
Right. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so thinking about that, though, so look, this is just the latest in a long series of amazing claims about how much it actually costs, right? So $90 billion and 900,000 people employed in the industry who are at risk from that. A couple of years ago, there was another study from Oxford Economics for AFACT, who are, you know, the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, mm-hmm. Who obviously care a lot about that. They were saying, like, it was 1.something billion. There are other studies elsewhere in the world that say that it's peanuts compared to the actual increase in value that you get from hyping everybody up about your
Let's also
and stuff.
Recall that none of these industries are, you know, having a massive downturn. I mean, aren't movie companies making money hand over fist at the moment?
It is the best time to be making movies ever in the history of the world right now.
Well, if you read this report, the value in terms of percentage of GDP is decreasing rapidly over the last 15 years. Yeah. But in terms of absolute dollars, remains the same.
So here's a question. So you're saying that the value that they're reporting that they've earned...
The value of all of these industries together. Yeah. You know, of your movie makers and your libraries
the value,
and your
the value
toy
of
makers.
The industry as in like their reported revenues?
Yeah,
yes. Yeah, okay. So does this actually take into account the fact that all of these companies are like offshoring things to escape tax?
Doesn't take into account offshoring. Doesn't take into account the fact that the GDP, which is influenced by mining, where we've had a boom over the last 15 years, is growing. All these type of things.
I have a problem. The connection that they're making... think of the industry as in all of these industries. And by the way, piracy is ruining it for everyone. That
right,
is a massive leap, right? It's like the you know, we're over here, we've gone 10 kilometres over that way.
And don't let's talk about the massive cuts to funding to filmmakers, to game manufacturers, to arts in general. All of these things that the government should be supporting and supporting our creators. And then they go, oh, but it's all piracy's fault. No, it's not.
Yeah. I suspect that the technology, the disintermediation component of the industry as well is a big part of it. I mean, if they are actually losing money or, you know, compared to GDP, then perhaps they need to look at what market forces are causing that. And perhaps something that they need to do is actually look at what people are willing to pay for the product.
Well,
I don't think a lot of people are buying stuff on the likes of, you know, iTunes or Big Pond Music or any of those kind of music content distribution networks because it costs too much.
That's part of it. But the other thing is a lot of the content's just not available to us in Australia.
Hmm.
There was a great story on The Reckoner, which I'm going to chuck up on our Facebook, actually, because it's a great link, that talked about, you know, the sort of what TV was available, how long the delay was, whether or not it was free or you know, available to get some other way. And, it's just, it's not pretty. It's not pretty at all.
Hmm. Shall we take a breather?
We should.
We need some pants to be aired.
Again, 16 minutes to one. You're listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Technogaze.
More of your favourite shows. Joy 94.9.
Is this one of your favourite shows?
I hope so.
This is my favourite show.
This is my favourite Technogaze show of the week.
Oh, really?
Of the whole week.
Yeah.
But if you like listening to more Technogaze shows during the week, you can also listen to our podcast.
You can. joy.org.au/technogaze is a place to go.
Yeah.
Or that was really good corroboration of the podcast's existence there. Well done. You can.
It is there.
Everyone can.
We're talking about piracy, of course, and in particular, there's a lot of talk about the government trying to crack down on piracy and make it required that ISPs forward information on to their users if they are suspecting people of piracy. If you want to make a public submission to the consultation on online piracy, we're going to... There's a submission site, the ag.gov.au, which is the Attorney General's website, has a place there to do it. We'll tweet the address in a few
months. If he, in fact, knows how to use the internet, he might even read it. I'm sure he's got staff to do
it. Okay. He'll know exactly what you've written already.
I suspect he'll get a whole bunch of paper of the printouts of the damn
submissions. Oh, he'll get some policy.
He doesn't even have a computer on his desk.
Can you believe that?
That's ridiculous.
Anyway, so what you can do is you can jump on that website. You can check out a discussion paper, and then you can provide your responses about what it is that they're thinking about. So if you've got any strongly held opinions, which I know we certainly do with our pants, we're going to keep our pants on, and we are going to spend some time maybe talking about it on air a little bit more in the future. But if you want to have your say and you don't have a radio station to to be on, this is a great way to get your voice out as well.
I'm gonna try and jump us to a little bit of a quick discussion later on in the run sheet, because we just pointed out the fact that the Attorney General does not have a computer on his desk. Mm. One of our topics later in the run sheet is, could you do 80% of the work of your work on an iPad?
Right, good question. Does he have an iPad?
So does he have an iPad in a desk drawer and that he's actually doing 80% of his job on?
That he hides it whenever somebody walks in.
He's got a lot of paper on his desk. I did.
Yeah.
You could slip a tablet under all that paper, like in a hurry, I suppose.
Maybe not a first gen iPad, maybe a third, you know.
Hey, real talk though, I don't think I could do 80% of my work on an iPad.
I don't think
could
I could
you?
Either.
I need keyboard and screen real estate.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a similar argument that we get into around Chromebooks as well, because people think that Chromebooks can replace, you know, a PC or a Mac, and I couldn't do most of the stuff. Well, not most. I couldn't do a lot of the stuff that I do on a Chromebook, because I actually need apps that run locally and do things that aren't in a browser. But a lot of people do.
I think that those amongst us here in the studio, anyway, are likely to be, you know, your more quote power user unquote, and need to be able to do a bit more with your computers than just writing,
browsing the web. Yeah.
And It is horses for courses, and it always is when choosing a new device for your use at home or at work. Make sure that you choose the device that's appropriate to it.
And I mean, if pretty much all you do all day is update Facebook, you know, keep an eye on your mum and dad or whatever, and maybe bash out the occasional email, then okay, great.
I like the thought of bashing out the occasional email.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You want a punching bag keyboard? Is that what you're saying?
No, I just I just thought the little Unix bash reference.
Actually, everyone should bash out an email to George Brandis. That's okay.
Yes. Mm. Now, what time is it, Jason?
Let me check my magical watch on my
wrist.
No one can see this.
No one can see. Yeah, no, that's fine.
What do you have on your wrist?
It's fantastic radio.
Jason is well-renowned for his gadgetry.
Apparently I am now.
Huh? You should be.
On my wrist, I have an Android Wear watch.
An Android Wear watch.
That was amazing.
Sorry, I'm just hanging for anyway.
Wearable computing. It's the now.
It's here. It's now.
It's all happening.
It's
What does it do?
It displays the notifications from your phone.
Right.
Which, if you remember, like about sort of 12 or 18 months ago, I got to have a bit of a play with Google Glass and came in and told everyone about it. And at the time, I said that I felt like a lot of the things that you would see on the screen in Google Glass, you would sort of like be swiping through them like cards, and they make a lot more sense if it was actually on a watch. That's what this does. It puts all of your notifications on your watch. You can swipe through them, you can open them, and if you have an app that's been updated to be aware of the existence of Android wearables, then you can actually interact with it on the watch and do a few more things. So instead of just seeing the fact that you've received a message in Hangouts, you can actually reply and speak your response, and it will voice to text it. Sometimes it will even get it right, and it'll put it into the Hangout for you. I've had some hilarious mislistens. Like, Michael and I were trying earlier.
Join 94.9 does not compute.
It computed twice out of about 10 times. It was something like join 94.9, and other times it didn't get it right. The voice recognition on Android Wear seems to be slightly fallible. It needs to be better.
Now, there's a bunch of these watches getting out. Which one have you got?
So this is the LG G Watch.
Yep.
There's also the Samsung Gear Live, and Motorola's Moto 360 is coming later this year.
Now, the Moto 360, everyone's been talking about that over the last few days, because it shouldn't be that strange considering that every watch that I own has a round face, but it's got a round face.
Yeah, but it has a round screen.
It has a round screen, yes, as a face.
That's kind of the cool thing. There's very few round screens in technology.
Right. Right. Most of the other ones obviously are square.
How do they even do that? Because it's like pixels are square, aren't they?
Mm. I guess they get some sandpaper out and
shave them off.
I think the pixels end at the curve. But yeah, that's kind of thing. It's kind of mind blowing. It's a round screen.
It looks very cute.
Now with the notifications, does the actual watch vibrate so you can tell when you've got a notification?
Yes, the watch vibrates, but there's no speaker.
Right.
So
it's just a haptic type feedback.
Yeah, it's a haptic feedback when you get a notification. It's kind of hilarious that now that people get notifications on their wrist, if you say go out to dinner with your parents and you're in the middle of like a big conversation on Hangouts, you might end up looking at your watch a lot, and then your parents get annoyed because they think that you just don't want to be there, which is why you're looking at your watch a lot.
But it's less intrusive than pulling out your phone and sort of scrolling through that.
I actually kind of think that people have gotten used to people pulling out their phones and checking them. Mm. We're not used to people checking their watch a lot, and we still see that as a sign of, you know, just uncomfortableness and wanting to get out of there.
You really do need the retina implant so that it's completely hidden from everyone else, don't you?
Yeah, totally. And then people will just wonder why you're like, you know, winking and, you know, shaking your head and nodding your head, and they'll just think that you've contracted something.
Mm.
Now,
this is one message for you, Michael.
Stop roping me into this just because I am forward thinking and ask all of these questions up at front. Really?
So a texter has texted in. His name's Dave. He says, does this mean you can grinder on your wrist? So you've beaten Michael to Michael's favourite question. So every time
I was
we
asked ages ago, days ago.
I believe when we started talking about Android, where it was a couple of months ago, Michael asked the question if you can use Grindr on your wrist. The answer at the time was that something like Tinder is probably better suited to running on your wrist
because you can flick
left and right. And there is in fact a Tinder extension for Android Wear now that lets you flick left and right.
Thank goodness for that.
I do have a question, but I think it's probably best suited to Thursday night. Like 10 o'clock.
Oh, right. Does it respond? No.
No.
I don't know what's going on.
Hey.
But I'm now going to listen on Thursday night at 10 o'clock. I don't know what's going on.
That's assuming we get invited onto
hide and seek.
Hide and seek again.
I think we should be.
I don't know if we will be. Now, Jason, you've been to London before, haven't you?
I have.
How would you like to be able to pay for the London buses from your phone?
I don't mean sticky taping your Oyster card to the back of your phone.
Well, so this is actually an interesting thing. This is one of the new features that Android's had in for a little while, the ability to do what they call NFC host card emulation. There is actually one financial institution in Australia that now lets you tap and pay with a Nexus 5 or with any Android phone that has NFC in it that's running KitKat or later. You can actually, you know, walk up to Coles and, you know, tap your phone. I kind of find it hilarious that cashiers just freak out. And you tap your phone on the thing and it beeps, and it's like, what did you just do to my card reader? What happened?
I paid you.
Yeah. You can do that now. And it is interesting. The company behind that is it's a financial services company called Cuscal. Mm. And when they introduced it earlier in the year, they said that they were looking at actually extending it to cover Opal card, which is our version
the
of
Sydney
Mikey
one.
Up in Sydney.
Mm.
So very soon we might actually be able to use our phones to tap on and off at Sydney train stations as well.
Haven't we come a long way? Like, if only that would be implemented here in Melbourne, to, you know, come from this place where Mikey was like the new big thing, to just be able to, you know, choose what device you tap on with.
Mikey takes so long to tap on and tap off, I'd be afraid my phone's battery would drain between when I tap
I like
it.
That.
It's like, tap, oh.
Well, imagine. I my phone has often run out of battery while I've been on the train because it's getting a bit old and sad.
This is an excellent point, actually, because it does need to be online to do it.
Yeah.
Maybe the Mikey base station could have built-in wireless chargers.
Ah.
That would be nice. Mm. It's... Four minutes to one.
Don't you hate it when the time changes when you're looking at the clock?
You're listening to TechnoGaze. We're running out of time, but we'll come back in a few moments with a wrap-up of the show.
TechnoGaze. Joy.
TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. We've come to that part of the show where it is the end for another week.
The end is nigh.
That part.
That part of the show.
Hey, so what if I told you... Or if I asked you to guess who is set to make an enormous amount of cash from app development this year, would you be thinking of some, you know, bespectacled dude wearing Dockers and a polo shirt in Silicon Valley?
Yes.
Yeah, or maybe if you're thinking about, you know, the bird game, the Flappy Bird game, you know, a nice fellow in Vietnam.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
doing it out of his backyard.
Yep.
No, I'm here to tell you that it's Kim Kardashian.
Oh, that's it. I'm going.
Kim Kardashian.
I'm glad you did this at the end of the show.
Has her name and her face and her likeness attached to this game called Kim Kardashian Hollywood. And she, just for being involved in it from that small extent, is set to net about $45 million from this game.
To be fair, it's kind of, it's you know, like you say her name and likeness has been loaned to the game. It is the first two words in the title.
No. But that's, okay. So she didn't, as far as I know, actually sit down with a keyboard and smash out a bit of Objective-C.
Isn't she a Cocoa programmer? Everybody seems to be a Cocoa programmer.
No, but
these days.
My favourite Twitter account at the moment is InfoSec Taylor Swift. Oh, she's amazing.
Oh, bless. That's all we've got time for and today. Follow. If you missed any part of the show, or perhaps you would like to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by jumping onto joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next is a Joy News Bulletin with Tim Lennox, and right after that will be Pete with Cravings, the Nudie Foodie, of course. Thank you very much, Jason, for coming to Melbourne, especially to do the show.
Oh, Tase, I'd do it any time. In fact, I may do it next week.
Hey, 2 weeks in a row. Awesome. Michael, thank you very much for pushing buttons.
Thank you.
Raina, thank you very much for having purple hair.
As always.
My name's Mark. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll catch you next week.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.